My name is Marnie Penning. My address is 911 North Lexington Street, Arlington, Virginia, 22205, and my phone number is 703-522-2450. After 2 weeks at my father's farm in Mount Kisco, New York, which he had bought some years earlier, the newlyweds set out in a private railroad car, the Constitution, for their honeymoon trip around the world, he with a valet and she with a maid. They made their way across America, stopping at one point in Montana to see my father's copper mining friend, Big Bill Thompson. My mother was wearing her wedding present, a string of perfectly matched pearls. Though they were not especially big, this was the days before cultured pearls, and these were quite rare. She wore them all her life. As they were leaving, according to family lore, Mrs. Thompson turned to her husband and said, "Bill, do you see those pearls?" When he said yes, she queried, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" By the time the newlyweds reached San Francisco, where they were to visit with the California members of the Meyer family for a week before going on, my mother's maid hadn't worked out. Rosalie found a trained nurse who wanted to travel and was willing to do what was necessary, although she knew nothing about what was expected or needed. So the unsatisfactory maid was replaced by a lady named Margaret Ellen Powell, a practical nurse and a Christian Scientist and the salt of the earth. It was the luckiest thing that ever happened for all of us Meyer children, since Powellie, as we all came to call her, stayed to bring us up. When my parents returned from their honeymoon and settled back into New York, my mother was pregnant. My father went back to Wall Street, and she had to begin making the necessary adjustments to being a married woman. Overnight, she found herself living a wealthy life and running households. She once told me of thinking, as she rode in a chauffeur-driven car, "Can this really be me?" As she herself acknowledged, she had a difficult time, especially in the first years, long before I was born, the fourth child of five. She had rarely thought about what marriage entailed in the way of relationships to spouse and children. I'm not sure she was ever really able to. She seemed to regard her marriage as a contract she would always keep, and in her way she did. Her duty, as she saw it, lay in having and rearing children, running the houses, and being there when needed to fulfill her obligations as a hostess. After that, like so many of today's women, but way ahead of her time, she was determined to maintain her own identity and intellectual life. In her own world, she went her own way. Later, in a memoir, she explained how she felt at the time. "I rebelled inwardly and outwardly against the suddenly imposed responsibilities of marriage. During the first few years, I behaved as if the whole world were in a conspiracy to flatten out my personality and cast me into a universal world called woman." So many of my married college friends had renounced their intellectual interests and lost themselves in a routine of diapers, dinners, and smug contentment with life that I was determined this should not happen to me. I wanted a big family, but I also wanted to continue my life as an individual. I believe she was often desperately unhappy in her marriage, especially at first. She went to a psychiatrist on whom she leaned heavily. She tried to escape any problems with her marriage and motherhood by studying Chinese art and language, and by maintaining her connections to her gallery friends at 291 Fifth Avenue, and developing an interest in collecting modern art. She had already met a man who was to be one of the great influences in her life, the industrialist and pioneer collector Charles Lang Freer. They met at an exhibit of Chinese art, and he, having heard of her interest, invited her to Detroit to see his collection. She responded, "Next week I'm going to have a baby, but I'll come as soon after that as I can." My father went along as a chaperone, and he, too, became a friend of Freer's. From January 1913 until his death, my mother studied under and collected with Freer. Often they would divide up the shipments from his personal representatives in China. She had already studied the Chinese language at Columbia from 1911 to 1913, and for the next 5 years, with the aid of a Chinese scholar whom she had often had in residence at Mount Kisco, she amassed research materials for an analysis of the contributions of Confucianism, Taoism, and Buddhism to the development of the Tang and Sung dynasties. This resulted in the publication, in 1923, of her book Chinese Painting as Reflected in the Thought and Art of Li Lung Yen. Unfortunately, Freer, to whom it was dedicated, had died in 1919. She visited him constantly throughout his long, agonizing illness. At his death, Freer designated 5 trustees for his gallery in Washington, of whom my parents were 2.